from the ArmeniaProud.com studios.
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture. Only on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network.
Genatsit, genatsit. Pai Luis Inchpesek, my friends. It's April 29th, and I've got Chris.
Hello.
How are you doing, buddy?
I am doing great.
And Brian behind the dashboard over there.
And, hanging in there.
He gives me a big thumbs up.
Mahalo.
My friends, if you're not aware, there's been somewhat of a peace in Artsakh right now. We've had, I don't know, they're saying peace, but they keep taking one out at a time. They keep shooting at our troops, and it's kind of funny because if we retaliate, then they bombard us. Mm. They're looking for us to retaliate.
Well, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
They want a reason.
I mean, they keep panking 2, 3, 4 soldiers here and there, and we're trying to hold ourselves back together and not fire back, because if we fire back, then they're going to say, look, they fired. We had no choice, and that's what they're doing. These Azeris are bastards, I'm telling you. They're bastards. They're a-holes. They're cunning little snakes. Cunning little snakes, my friends.
And always excuses. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I hear, like, the sympathizers online and, you know, the stuff that they have to say about Armenia and Armenians. Like, and it's like they all huddle together, you
right.
know, make up these lies and then spread them, like, the same lies.
I've never believed how sheep, they're sheep. They follow these people, and not one of them question anything.
No.
They don't question.
It's really sad.
The Turkish government, the Azeri government, or anything like that. They just go, oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's it. We're going to attack. You're right. Basically, the Azeris have nothing financially for them, so they send them off to war.
Yep.
This is perfect for the Azeris. They get rid of population. They get rid of people. And we look like the boogeyman in the process.
Yep. No, you're
right. It's a no-lose situation.
Yep.
Anytime there's any sort of argument in Azerbaijan, send them to the boogeyman. So that's what happens.
Yeah, and it's happening over
over and over again.
It's really frustrating.
This week, my friends, we're going to have a couple guests. I think you're going to love our guests. Our first guest is Diana Angelson. And she's come up with the movie Armenia, My Love.
Mm.
Armenia, My Love.
That sounds amazing.
Armenia, My Love, my friends. That's a great movie. It's been out. I mean, it's come out in 2016. I'm just here to promote it a little bit more here. Diana Angelson, she's going to be on our show. And then we're going to have George Yakubyan. George is one of the leaders of the orphanages, of all the orphanage organizations out there. And I really wanted to know the process on how a Western diaspora person in the Armenian community can pick up an orphan, you know? I mean, those poor little kids in Armenia need a mom and dad. Why not are Western people knowing the system and how it works and so forth?
Yep.
I think it's important.
It is important.
So, and that's what we got, and we'll have our gals on later to give their views on cooking with Mariam. And Ani, she'll blow us away with some stars being aligned.
I'm always blown
away. She's definitely cool. Yeah. Well, it's definitely been a crazy week, so let's get to it. We're going to have a great show. My friends, whatever you guys got, by the way, Chris, we've had a lot of emails coming our way.
Yep.
We've had a lot of emails, a lot of people leaving messages on Facebook. A toast to Armenia, or toast to Armenia, right? That's our Facebook site.
Yep.
And we've had a lot of people. We're almost at 5,000.
It's massively growing.
5,000 clicks, 5,000 likes. How about that?
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's beautiful, my friends. 5,000 likes. I've been getting messages from you guys. I can't tell you how honored I am, how excited I am. We've had a bunch of clicks, a lot of people talking to one another on Toast to Armenia. I love it. I love it. And you know what? If you like our show too, go to iTunes and give a good review.
It's really easy to do.
Give a good review. You almost sound like that Humpty Dance. It's real easy to do.
Easy to do.
Goes like this. No, but in any case, yeah, it's real easy to do. Go to iTunes, find Armenia Proud, and leave a comment with a 5-star. You know what? I appreciate it so much. Hey, folks, there's a movie out that's getting great reviews right now. We're pretty excited to have the writer slash director, and she's also starring in the film. This movie's called Armenia, My Love, Diana Angelson. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Tell us a little bit about what's going on over there.
Well, we had a premiere on the 14th of April for Armenia, My Love, the Armenian genocide movie of this year. And it continued in 3 theaters in Los Angeles for 2 weeks. And now it's available on DVDs and online. You can find more information at www.armeniangenocidemovie.com.
Okay, so it's not out at the theaters right now?
We had a contract for 2 weeks. We had a lot of people coming in and see it, but a lot of people from outside of California can watch it online and the DVDs.
Oh, okay. Beautiful. Yeah. You know, I really thought that maybe the movie might have went to some festivals and so forth, like Chris Chambers had one. It went really great with that Aram Aram. We kind of packed it in houses for him. So
it will go, definitely. I mean, it did qualify for the Oscars, so that's
wow.
Great. It got qualified, which is, we'll find out. And it will probably be sent.
You know, folks, I you could check the trailer out, too, with Armenia, My Love. And I tell you what, it was really damn good. I cannot wait to watch that with the family. We've got people coming in, and you know what? I'll look for that. This weekend we're going to have people, so I'll put that in on the big TV and we'll all watch it.
It's a tribute to Armenia and your land and your people, and I just hope everybody will be proud. We had people come and say, thank you, America, thank you, Diana, for this movie. People were very touched because it is dedicated entirely to the victims of the Armenian genocide and to the survivors and to the descendants of the survivors. So it's
my next question. That goes right in tune with the next question is, what gave you the idea of doing something like this? I mean, Angelson doesn't sound like Angel Sihan or anything like that.
Well, I'm Romanian, and my name is Diana Busuyok, but I got married, and I changed it to Angelson.
Ah.
And I'm not Armenian. People ask me why. I do not know. We do not learn about the genocide in Romania, which is a sister Orthodox country of Armenia, and we have an Armenian community. We still do not learn in schools about the genocide. People don't know. So when I came here with a scholarship in Los Angeles, my family became the Armenians because that was the community I lived in, and all my friends were Armenians. I miss my family. I had my Armenian mothers and so, and the question, you know, they started to talk to me about the genocide, and I had no clue. And I did study a lot. I did study history, and I know my thing. I know. So for me, it was a shock that, how come, I can go through a university and study and not hear about that? And apparently, it's not, not apparently, I mean, for sure, it's the genocide is not taught in Romania and many other countries.
Why is that, though? Why isn't it's not taught in Romania?
I have no idea, because we do, you know, we do study the Ottoman Empire.
I know.
And we have a big history of that. So for me, that was the big question mark. And I said, one day I'll make a movie about this, and that I was a student. And in 2014, I realized, 100 years since the Armenian genocide. And a lot of my American friends had no clue what that was. So I said, I have to do that. And I do have a production company, Flawless Production. along with my husband, and we did two movies before, and that was my passion project. I said, I have to do this. I have to have it in time. But we actually finished the shooting. The last day of shooting was April 24th of last year. So the day 100 years happened. We were there shooting at the march because that's like the movie is about the life of the movie is the life of a little boy that is 10 when he loses his family, and he lives his whole life. He gets to America and he gets to live and watch the march 100 years later. And
wow, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
That's beautiful. It was so emotional. It's such an amazing experience. And to be there, I mean, I went to the march before, but to be there and make the movie.
No, I mean, that's so gripping that you're thinking, you know, the man, the old man standing there and seeing where he was and where he is now. That's beautiful.
Believe me, it still gets me. Like, it gets me to tears. Like, the whole, like, we had the premiere sold out. Everybody, old and young, they were all in tears. It's a beautiful, like, the ending is superb. It's the best, you know, it's in my mind, it's the best way to give homage to what happened in those 100 years of not being recognized and not being apologized for.
All right. So, Diana, you started studying this around 2014, you say, or a little bit before then?
No, I knew about it 10 years ago when I came here. So I just wanted to make the movie, so it's hard to make a movie. I started to write the script in 2014, and people asked me, what did you base it on? And I said, there are so many stories. There are more than 1.5 million stories, right? There are millions of stories of each kid and each life and each... And I said, I want to create a metaphor for the entire people, for the 1.5 million people. So the entire movie is a metaphor. The character, Tigran Orbelian, he represents the Armenian people. He is the 1.5 million that died, and he's the orphans, and he is the shattered lives, and he's everybody. So I tried in a way to make it as a poem, more, you know, than
it's almost like the true story. Whatever characters, like, you played Hazmik Orbelian, is that it? And was she a tough gal in the movie? Was she someone that held the family together, the part that you wrote, the part that you played?
Yeah. I thought of it. I mean, the original title of the movie, the alternate title is Armenia, My Country, My Mother, My Love. And it's, you know, the mother is the mother, but also the land, Armenia, the mother that the kid will never forget. And the message is, no matter what happens, don't forget where you're coming from, your mother, always Armenia. So in a way, my character is too, you know, a metaphor for the land and for the love of a mother and the mother that's sacrificed.
That's beautiful, Diana.
Yeah.
It's more beautiful to me knowing that this is a Romanian woman, that girl that has embraced another culture like that. It's kind of like it's difficult to do. Honestly, I would feel sorry for what happened to that other culture, but to come out and say, hey, you know what, I'm going to write a movie and let everyone know about this. Was the casting difficult for this?
So I did have 800 people want to audition, and I did choose all my Armenian actors. I didn't know, now I know more actors than I knew then, but my main characters are Armenian actors, very famous. Shakia Tukhmanian, who is amazing, like, she is the best actress in the world. I love her.
Wow.
And her son Arman Shanian, a very talented actor and opera singer, and Nazo Bravo Aslanian, who is a great actor and a also an artist, a singer. And I had an international cast for many other scenes, and I did have many other Armenian actors in different parts, but overall I had 300 people that I worked with.
Wow. And was this all shot in California, or was it spread around?
California, in the desert. Mojave, which is Nevada in California.
Wow.
We had many locations, maybe 40 locations. And the movie is half black and white, half in color, because it's another metaphor for when the first Armenian man dies on that day of April 24th, 1915. That's when life loses its color.
Yeah, yeah.
So everything goes in black and white from there till one day when he's older, the boy, and he manages not to forget, never to forget, but to forgive, and that's, you know, to start living his own life, and that's when color comes back. So that's right. Why in the trailer you have both black and white and color.
That's great. And you adapting to this culture too. I mean, God, Diana, I did a little research: French, English, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, Armenian, Russian, Greek. You know all these languages.
No, I said little Armenian because on the set, I said, well, I can actually learn Armenian.
You know more now. You know more now after the movie.
But I said, no. I said, I don't have time, guys.
Oh, okay.
I was starting to speak Armenian, but then at the end, I was like, I have to finish the movie, and then I'll start learning Armenian because there's too much work for me just producing and making the movie. So that's my next project, learning Armenian very well.
Well, I mean, that's got to be much easier for you to play the role, too, and understand it with so many knowledges of cultures as well.
Yeah, I guess. Also, I mean, I do live in this community, so I know the people, I know the Armenians, and I know the differences between cultures, and I know Armenia is very special, but, you know, it was a beautiful ride. I mean...
That's great.
It's because I have a lot of love and respect for your culture.
Oh.
And why? People ask me, but why? I said, look, Armenians are the only ones in the world that if you make a movie saying, Armenia, my love, they'll say, oh, thank you. A lot of people are not patriotic and or so country-loving. And to me, the love that Armenians have for their land and their people and the way they are united and they're together... It is the most beautiful thing, and I respect it. And I love my country. I love Romania. I love my land. But I also wish I were Armenian.
Wow, Diana, I tell you what, you may be on the top of all my guests right now. This is beautiful.
Yeah, it's the truth. I mean, that is the truth.
So what's your next project? Are you thinking about anything, or are you taking a little breather? There's got to be something in the back burner in your brain about what you're going to try to pull off next time.
I'm going on Monday, and I'm starting a new film, so in 3 days, called Immigrant Priest, about an Orthodox priest. It's a comedy, tragic comedy, that we're going to shoot in Romania, in Los Angeles, the life of a priest. And in September, I'm going to Africa, and I'm going to shoot a film in French about, it's also a biography of an African boy that becomes a man in his becomes a great man in Africa.
Wow. So, you are very busy.
I'm very busy. I know, I'm very tired.
Unbelievable. I would think you would have taken a little breather after this one, kick back, enjoy, but you're going right back into it.
I love it. I just hope, you know, it's a miracle that this film happened, and I think, you know, it's a miracle after miracle that I can still keep doing movies, and I just pray.
You're great, Diana. Let me ask you this too: how do people again find this film? What can we do? Just let us know. I'd love to promote it. If it's a DVR, if it's on pay per view, whatever it is.
If you go to www.armeniangenocidemovie.com, you can rent it or buy it online. Or you can get a DVD, and I know you can have the information for the DVD on the website. Or, like, there is a website, a Facebook page, ArmenianGenocideMovie.com or Armenia My Love, the page.
Okay.
There you have the link for the DVDs. Like,
Me and My Love.
We just had them yesterday, and people started to buy the DVD.
So, folks, if you're out there, there's a Facebook site as well called Armenia My Love, and we could definitely find whatever we need to know to get this movie to see it in our houses. So that's beautiful. I don't even have to go to the cinema. I could just rent it from my house.
Yeah, that is great.
Well, hey, Diana, I've had a great time talking to you. This has been great, and thank you very much. Our people will know about this now. It's the movie is called Armenia, My Love. So great having you, and the history behind it, I kind of like it more, the way that you really love another country like this, that you're embracing, like, hey, I could be Armenian as well. So it's beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, Diane. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, guys, if you're out there and you go to Amazon to shop, I know you guys do. I know a lot of my Armenian friends that shop on Amazon, and they tell me, hey, Jono, we shopped out of Amazon, and we went to ArmeniaProud.com, and it's on the right-hand side of your computer. If you're going through your telephone, your cell phone, your landline, whatever, not landline, there's no such thing as landline. Your cell phone, you go all the way at the bottom, and there you'll see Amazon. But if you're on your laptop or on your home computer, it's on the right-hand side. It's Amazon. You click on Amazon, you won't see us anymore, and you shop whatever you shop, and guess what? We get a little love back. So I appreciate it, and it keeps the lights on for our show. We love doing this show for you guys. And go to Amazon, but first you got to click on to our show on ArmeniaProud.com, and then you click on Amazon, and bingo, you're helping us out. Hey, folks, our next guest, God bless these people, because this organization is called SOAR, S-O-A-R, and it's Society for the Orphaned Armenian Relief. How interesting is that? We've got the chairman of this group, George Yakubyan. George, nice to have you on the show.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Hey, George, basically, how does this thing work with this orphanages in Armenia? I noticed on the map you got possibly one or two in Georgia. You got them in Artsakh. You got several in Armenia. You've got Syria. You've got Lebanon. Tell us how does this organization work? How's this thing function?
SOAR is a charitable organization that provides humanitarian relief to orphaned Armenian children. And just like you said, there are Armenian orphanages that we support in a variety of different countries. Most of the work that we do is in Armenia, but just like you said, John, Lebanon, Syria, Artsakh, Jabbok, and two facilities in Istanbul. Our executive board is based in the suburbs of Philadelphia. We have volunteers around the world, 109 chapters, and SOAR provides assistance in a variety of different ways. We have kind of the traditional fundraising event planning chapters where if there is a specific need one of the facilities has, chapter will put together a fundraising event, and the proceeds will go toward whatever that project is. We also have program chapters that are responsible for developing educational initiatives and then implementing them directly with the kids virtually, like a language tutoring program, for example.
I gotcha.
So everybody's contributing in one way or another, ultimately for the benefit of orphaned Armenian children. We have staff in Armenia that are responsible for overseeing everything that happens there. I go to Armenia a few times a year, visit with the orphanage directors, visit with the kids, make sure everything is being done properly, review projects we did last year, plan for projects we're doing this year and next, and it's one big team effort from start to finish.
Excellent, excellent. I also went to your site and found that you also had some donations, a good amount, I guess close to 400,000, 500,000 that went to the Syrian Armenian kids out there in Syria. Anything?
Syria is a special situation because There are three facilities that we support in Syria. Our primary contact is an Armenian Catholic nun by the name of Sister Louisa Kasargian. She is my childhood vice principal from the Armenian school here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
She's been back in Syria now where her biological family is for the last few years. And I get updates from her by email once every week or two, but it's difficult to actually get help to her. So we rely on kind of a Pony Express process where we receive the donations here. I wire the money to Bishop Armash, who's in Lebanon. He receives the money there. He gets the money to the Armenian embassy in Syria. Sister Louisa gets the money from there. And that's how we've been getting funds to her during the last couple of years. It's difficult to, if not impossible, to get goods to her, but the money gets to her, thankfully, in full.
Wow.
And as quickly as we can get it. That's the challenge is the speed.
Yeah, because it doesn't sound like it gets from point A to point B in just a one toss there. Yeah, I mean, there seems like you're going through a lot of channels.
We are, and thankfully now we're kind of in this process where when we first started getting money to her, we were doing small amounts at a time, $500, $1,000. And now that we know that our process is secure, as soon as we get one wire there, we're ready to do the next one. So we're kind of into this process now, this queue where we can get her funds every few months.
I got you. So let me ask you this too, George. You've got the situation going on in Artsakh right now, it's a terrible crisis now with the war. I mean, they call it a conflict. I don't know why they don't say it's a war, because there's a lot of people affected by it. Are you dealing a lot more, you know, me saying this, but a lot of orphans right now in the Artsakh area? I mean, has there been an increase?
In Artsakh, no. So thankfully, our staff in Armenia has been in touch with the two Armenian orphanages that we support in Artsakh. They, to this point, have not been affected in any significant degree to the war that's going on there. We're in touch with them on a regular basis. We do have a collection going specifically for the Artsakh orphanages. But at this point, the casualties that Armenia is experiencing in this war have not caused an increase of children.
Okay, good. Shout out. That's great to hear that. How does one get involved in the Western diaspora to say, you know what, I would like to adopt? What channels do they have to go through? How long does this process take? How much money does one put into adopting a child from Armenia or anywhere else in the Middle East as well that's Armenian?
Okay. So my wife and I adopted our oldest daughter from Armenia back in 2006. So I'm familiar with that process intimately. And for the most part, the process itself hasn't changed much. And today, if somebody was interested in adopting a healthy Armenian infant from Armenia, there are a couple of orphanages from where healthy infants would come. The main difference between today and 2006 is that if you are a U.S. citizen living in the U.S. and you're interested in adopting a child from Armenia, you have to use an accredited agency to facilitate that adoption. International law requires it. They call it an accredited service provider. What that means is that an official agency, one that's been recognized by the U.S. government as being an agency that can legally provide services to an individual or a couple to facilitate an adoption in Armenia. There's one agency that we recommend all the time. They're called Hopscotch Adoption. They are located in North Carolina. they can facilitate adoptions from individuals and couples anywhere in the U.S. or internationally facilitate adoptions in Armenia. They've been doing adoptions in Armenia in that area of the world for a long time, so they're intimately familiar with the process. If somebody was interested in adopting from Armenia, and I get calls, even though SOAR is a charity, and the information that we present on our website about adopting is just there as a courtesy because my wife and I went through it, I get calls probably every week or two with people who are interested, asking the same questions that you ask. And the first thing, of course, I say is that we're a charity, but there is this wonderful agency in North Carolina who can take care of you. As far as the other question, if somebody was interested in adopting a healthy infant, they're probably looking at a process that will take 5 years from start to finish. And start meaning starting the paperwork today, finish being you're arriving back to the United States with your newly adopted child.
Wow, the reason 5 years.
It's a long time. And that's the second thing I always say to people is, listen, if you're really serious about doing it, or if you're pretty sure you're serious, start the process today. The reason it takes that long is simply because there is a surplus of prospective adoptive families than there are eligible children who are ready to be adopted. Most people want healthy infants. And right. Unfortunately... Or fortunately, it's certainly fortunate for Armenia's situation. It's not as fortunate for kids, for parents who are looking to adopt from Armenia. But the parent or the individual will probably spend the first year to year and a half finishing their paperwork. That process hasn't changed much since when my wife and I went through it. Once you are approved to adopt in Armenia, start to finish paperwork, at those preliminary steps, what you're doing at this point is simply you are waiting for what's called a referral. A referral means there's a child in an orphanage who you can adopt if you are interested in adopting him or her. The problem or the issue with speed is that once you have your preliminary paperwork finished, you are going on a list. And you could be on a list of 30, 40, 50 people, parents, individuals ahead of you who are waiting for that next referral. Jeez. And because Armenia isn't China, Armenia isn't India, where there are hundreds or thousands of kids coming into the system annually, these parents are literally waiting for children to be born, for them to be surrendered to an orphanage, for that child to make its way onto an official registry, at which point family number one or parent number one can be approached and say, listen, we have this child, are you interested? If that family is interested, they consummate that adoption. If that child isn't interested in that child for one reason or another, down to parent number two, until you get down to wherever you happen to be on the list. And that waiting time is estimated to be about 5 years from start to finish.
Wow. Wow. So there are people waiting, like you said, 30 to 40 families are waiting for these kids as well?
The 30 to 40 is just a guess.
Oh, I get you.
It's just a guess because I am not involved in the adoption process, as certainly as much as Hopscotch is or other agencies. But yeah, that's exactly, I'm using hypothetical numbers, but that's the idea. There are families ahead of you in line. What I always tell people is that if you have any flexibility with the type of child that you are interested in, if you might consider a child with special needs, then the process might go a little bit faster. If you say to your adoption coordinator, listen, I would like an infant under the age of one, I want that child to be a female, I want that child to have blue eyes, I want that child to have brown hair, then you're probably going to be waiting longer because those right. kids aren't going to be coming through the queue as much as other kids might.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, putting it like this, like going to a restaurant and saying, I don't want a regular table, I want a booth, and you're going to have to wait a little bit longer to get a booth seating and so forth. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying there. How much does this cost as well? What's the cost on something like this?
So because the cost is standardized. If you go to an agency like Hopscotch, you can expect to pay a total from start to finish somewhere around $40,000, $40,000 to $45,000. Those costs, that dollar amount, is not a dollar amount that you need to have sitting as a lump sum in your bank account to start the process. But $40,000 is about what you can expect to pay from start to finish, meaning day one to year five, in order to ultimately facilitate an adoption and bring a child home. And certainly the $40,000 is a price that reflects the cost to adopt a healthy child in Armenia. It is less if you are interested in adopting a special needs child, probably about half less, maybe $20,000, $21,000, something like that, to adopt a child with special needs.
I just find that to be really, really expensive, too, especially if you're in Armenia and maybe an Armenian would like to adopt. I don't see anyone in Armenia that can really fork out $40,000 to $50,000. I mean, it almost has to be like the West, the diaspora adopting on this, because I just can't see Armenians from Armenia saying, you know what, we're doing good, knock on wood, we can have one more person in our family, it's not going to hurt our table, but bingo, I got to pay $40,000 to $50,000 to have this kid. It's kind of tough on these families as well.
So the answer to that is that those two prices that I just quoted you, the 21 and the, you know, the 40 price, are for families in the diaspora. If you wanted to consummate an international adoption, those are the costs that you are going to pay. The ability to, it's the same way that it wouldn't cost a U.S. citizen $40,000 to adopt a child here in the U.S. because it's not an international adoption anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The prices would go down considerably in Armenia. And in fact, one of the reasons that there just aren't as many children available for international adoption is because Armenia, during the last year or two, has attempted to minimize the number of children that are available for international adoption by implementing programs like you just suggested, by encouraging adoptions within Armenia, by creating a foster care system, and one other mechanism that SOAR is involved with as well, which is trying to facilitate family reunification. So if there is a particular child that is being put up for adoption, there are mechanisms in place to try to get that child back to a biological family, back to a biological parent, before that child is simply adopted out into the diaspora. And that's one reason why Armenia is kind of doing its due diligence to try to keep children with their biological families, because there is this kind of implicit recognition that children ultimately are better off, all things being equal, of course, with their biological family.
And,
now, as far as the cost is concerned, if somebody was interested in adopting a healthy child from Armenia and they are a U.S. citizen having to go through what are fairly elaborate practices and steps, there's what's called initial home study, which is a family being assessed by a community agency to determine whether or not their home is suitable to bring an adopted child into it. That's a step that, whether you are adopting internationally or adopting domestically, you have to go through this home study step. That could run you $1,500 to $2,000. Then there is a federal immigration step, and that step you complete after you receive your home study approval. Then you are creating a variety of paperwork, what's called your dossier, and all of that paperwork is ultimately going to be submitted to the Armenian government for the purposes of assessing your suitability to adopt from Armenia. There is, of course, an application fee from the agency. There is a service fee. Of course, the agency isn't doing the hopscotch, and other agencies aren't doing this for free. This is their livelihood. There is an adoption fee that they charge. There is the bulk of the $40,000, though, is what's referred to as the international service fee. And that is probably about two-thirds of the price. And that money, or those monies, go to a team of adoption providers in Armenia who are essentially making sure over the course of the 5 years that your adoption package gets translated properly, goes through all of the necessary legal channels, gets to all of the different ministries in Armenia, because there are various levels of ministry approval, make sure the paperwork is filed properly and in timely ways with the court, making sure that everything with respect to the U.S. Embassy is being taken care of, securing appointments on behalf of adoptive parents once they get to Armenia to finalize the adoption, registering deeds and appointments for the child so that they can be clear to leave Armenia, getting the child's passport, medical appointments, registration appointments, embassy interviews. So the bulk of that money is actually being spent in Armenia once these preliminary processes are done. And that's why it's relatively expensive. I can certainly say, though, what's being charged today is what my wife and I paid 10 years ago. It was around $45,000. And that number that I'm representing for us included everything from start to finish, including the airfare that we took back and forth a couple of times to visit our daughter when she was in the orphanage.
I got you. Does any of this money also go to funding these orphanages, like a small percentile going to all these orphanages as well?
No. The money. There are no monies that will ever change hands between an adoption service provider and an orphanage director or an orphanage itself.
Well,
the primary orphanage in Armenia where most adoptions occur through is NORK Orphanage, N-O-R-K, in Yerevan. That is a state facility. Certainly, it's one of the facilities that SOAR supports and has supported since 2005. But it's a government-funded agency, so there is no money that is changing hands with that agent, with that orphanage.
Okay, then George, I got to ask you this: who supports? How do these orphanages get their financial ways of supporting all these kids?
So the answer to that is it depends upon whether or not they are a private or a state orphanage. There are both in Armenia. There are state-run facilities like NORK Orphanage, like Kharpert Orphanage, like Maria Zmirlian. Some of these facilities are, some of the state orphanages like NORK handles children who are both healthy and some special needs under the age of 6. Then there are state orphanages that house older kids with special needs, like Kharpert and Maria Zmirlian. Then there are state orphanages that house healthy children. Mm-hmm. And then on top of the state orphanages, there are private facilities. The Our Lady of Armenia Center, for example, is an orphanage in northern Armenia in Gumri that houses primarily girls, but children who are healthy between the ages of 5, 6, up to 18. And then there are other private facilities in Gumri and in Yerevan, Merhuit, Merdun, Terchunyan Home. These are all facilities that are private. The state orphanages, just like it sounds like, they are getting their funding from the government. The government is providing them money for staff, for food, for clothes, for the basic necessities that the children absolutely need. And when I say the minimum, I mean the base minimum.
I'm sure.
These state facilities are, of course, getting a lot of support from SOAR. So the way SOAR works is that I meet with the directors at least once a year. I always encourage them to tell us, listen, tell us what your needs are. We're not going to be able to support everything. But if we don't know what we can help you with, there's no way that we're going to be able to help. So we may get a request for additional diapers from NORC. And NORC has been asking us for diapers for 10 years. And what we ultimately determined is that the government provides enough money to NORC for the babies to be changed twice a day only. And that's not enough, in our opinion, and probably by any reasonable
sense. No, you're right. 100% right.
Two changes is enough. They probably need to be changed at least double that. So what SOAR has done is we created an internal collection called the Diaper Fund, and we provide $1,000 a month to be used for diapers at NORC. And the way it works is that our money gets sent to our staff in Armenia. We're not turning over $1,000 to the orphanage, obviously, but instead what we're doing is we are buying the diapers, $1,000 worth every month, and hand-delivering them to the orphanage. And now the orphanage has basically double of what they were getting from the government in the way of a diaper allotment. And that's the way it works with the other facility. If there is something that they need, whether it's something child-specific or whether it's something, for example, like the construction of a soccer field or a aquatherapy suite or a hippotherapy arena for the special needs kids, that's what if we can provide it, we do.
Bravo.
The private facilities are private. They are not getting any government support, but instead they are relying exclusively on private donations and organizations like SOAR to help run them. And so both the private and the state need us for virtually the same reason. Limited resources that either the government is allocating or, in the case of the private facilities, they are relying exclusively on private support to help them.
I got you. So, you know, when I first heard about the 40 to 45, 50 thousand, I was thinking, here we go again, another thing the government of Armenia is making money. But what you just told me is it's basically the groups that, I mean, you got to go through a lot of red tape, and that's part of the fees that go along with it. So it's not just going to the Armenian government and then they're saying, okay, now go. I was really, at first, George, and I don't mean to sound crude on this, but I thought it sounded so much like a puppy mill type of thing to where 40 to 50,000. I just figured, how can people afford this? I had one of our emailers emailed me and told me about this. I mean, he was in saying that him and his family wanted to adopt from Armenia. This is what they had to pay. And I said, you know, I got to find out about it. I got to find out what this is all about. And you kind of cleared a lot of it for me right now. So I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I mean, it's a lengthy process. It's a time-consuming, paperwork sort of process. There are lots of different steps. And I think it's just the nature of international adoption. And by that, I mean, my understanding is that if a U.S. couple was interested in adopting from China or Central America or Russia, that my guess is that the process would be somewhat similar. The costs would be fairly identical. And I think it's just the nature of the process when you are dealing with citizens in the U.S. who are trying to adopt from a foreign country. Because there of course needs to be controls in place to avoid any risk of human trafficking, any risk of purchasing children.
Right.
So all of the steps that are in place today are there for a reason. The international law that requires all of these steps is designed to address human trafficking and make sure that children aren't being purchased illegally in Armenia and brought to the U.S. illegally.
I got
and
you.
The costs that are associated with that are, like I said, virtually the same costs that we paid a number of years ago, but the process has just been tightened in such a way that when you're done after 5 years, the couple, the U.S. citizen knows, you know what, this is my child. I did everything legally. I did everything in the proper way.
Right.
Is it expensive? Yes. But it's a 5-year process of bringing a child into your family.
I got you. And one more quick question here. God forbid, but what if a scenario in Artsakh, the kid loses both parents or something like this? You got to tell me something would move a little bit quicker on some little kid like that. I mean, I hate to see something like this go down 5 years where the kid's sitting there without parents and he knows what happened and so forth. It breaks my heart to think like that.
So the first thing that I'll say is that the orphanages in Artsakh are, the children who are at those facilities are referred to primarily as social orphans. So those children are there not because their parents have passed away, but rather for economic or social reasons. Primarily economic, where the family just simply can't take care of them for financial reasons. As a result, the family has temporarily relinquished those kids to the custody of the orphanage. And that's the way it works in Armenia, too. Some of the kids who are in these orphanages are there because they are natural orphans, meaning that their parents have passed away, they have nobody to take care of them. Oftentimes, though, the kids are social orphans. And they are there for social, economic reasons. Now, if a family was completely lost in Artsakh and those children either were or were not at the orphanage, but they are there now, would there be any way of facilitating the adoption consistent with international law? My guess is that the answer to that is no, for the reasons that we just talked about. That right. If there was, certainly you might be able to expedite an adoption within Artsakh to an Artsakh family. Maybe there's a way of facilitating a move of a child from Artsakh, from an orphanage in Artsakh to Armenia. That perhaps could be done in an expedited way if there's any advantage to that. But as far as moving the process along, I tell people this all the time when they call. The only way to move the process along is to get your paperwork in as quickly as possible. Get your steps done, your home study, take care of your business here so that when everything gets to Armenia, then they can take care of everything there. Okay. That's really the only way to move things along. There's no extra money that you can pay. It's really just doing your due diligence and making sure you are on top of the process so that the delays that are within your control get addressed as quickly as possible.
Okay. All right, George. One quick thing. What is your phone number if someone wants to get involved? Do you have a 1-800 number or an email site or anything like that that they can get a hold of you folks and find out more about this?
We do. The name of our organization is the Society for Orphans Armenian Relief. Our website is soar-us.org. At the very bottom of our homepage, you'll see our U.S. contact information. Our office address is there. Our office phone number is 267-615-1944. And our general email address is info@soar-us.org.
All right. That's great. Thank you very much, George. You know what, folks? This is something that I think is very important to all Armenians. No one wants to see little kids in orphanages and so forth, but you have to go through the process like Georgia just mentioned to us and make it happen. God bless, Georgia. You're doing a great job for us, and thank you. Thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure, General. Thanks very much.
All right. Take care. Hey, guys, after our show, I still want you guys to be listening to one of our shows on our podcast network, and that's Let's Get It On Podcast.com, and that's with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock. These guys, you know Big John, Let's Get It On. That's the guy on UFC. That's a big-time referee. Well, he does his show too, and we love for you guys to check his show out. It's beautiful. The Inside of the Octagon, he covers the outside as well. What's going on? Who's moving up? Who's moving down? You got to listen to the show. You'll love it. Let's Get It On Podcast.com. It's a beautiful show. Hey, guys, we ran a little bit over on this show. So what we're going to do, we're going to have Diana Angelson and George Yakubian on one show and Ani Amariam on a different show. And I tell you what, it's going to be on the same day, so it's going to be like part one and part two, okay? So I'm glad you enjoyed our show. Stay tuned for part two. Genatze Kisher Party. We'll see ya.
Tune in next week for another episode of
Genatze Hayed,
A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabenjian. You can find the show online at ArmeniaProud.com or download and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Plus, join the conversation on social media at Facebook.com/ArmeniaProud or at ArmeniaProud on Twitter. Get all of the Lineup Media Group shows at LineupMediaGroup.com. Oh.